We're going down the road and there's like a stoplight or a stop sign or something, and we're stopped there, and all of a sudden a hand just grabs my leg, and I'm like scared half that. I like jump and I look over, and this old beggar lady has just put a death grip on my leg from the curb into the tuk-tuk. And so the whole time she's just grasping my leg, she's like saying all these like chants and weird things, and I'm just like, what in the world is going on? And the tuk-tuk driver is just like yelling and probably cussing her out. And so he starts to like drive forward a little bit, but we're in like bumper to bumper traffic. He can't go anywhere. And so eventually he just like reaches behind and starts like slapping at her arm to get it off, and she will not let go. I mean, this lady is serious. And eventually the light turns green, the tuk-tuk driver slams on the gas, the lady finally lets go of my leg, and we just keep on heading to the next site like nothing even happened. And welcome back to the podcast. Thank you so much for joining me here again today. If you listened to last week's podcast, you would know that we're in the middle of talking about my summer backpacking trip to Southeast Asia that I took a couple summers ago. And so today we're going to be talking about India and Sri Lanka. Last week we talked a little bit about Indonesia and Nepal. And in the future I have like Laos, Vietnam, China, and multiple others to bring up. But today is really crazy because India is just a ridiculous country in and of itself. So I'm really excited to get into it. And so let's go ahead and start. If you travel to India, more than likely, if you fly, you're going to fly into New Delhi. And, you know, New Delhi really surprised me for multiple reasons. Whenever I was planning on going to India, a lot of people told me that I needed to basically prepare myself for the culture shock, that it was going to be totally off the wall, ridiculous, crazy. And so, you know, these people had been to India, and so, you know, I trusted what they were saying. But honestly, when I arrived in India, for the most part, India was not that crazy. I mean, I'm sure there were times that were pretty, you know, shocking and everything. But I honestly feel like Egypt was still the most intense place that I've ever visited. And so, you know, if you have like this bad connotation for India and sort of what your experience is going to be like there, you know, it might have been that way for some people. But for me personally, it was not as, you know, ridiculous of an experience as I was really expecting. And maybe that's why I sort of had these negative connotations. And so when I did arrive, it really surprised me. So arriving in New Delhi, the first thing that I would recommend is taking the metro into the city. And this was probably the biggest surprise of the entire trip for me, simply because this metro that takes you from the New Delhi airport downtown to like Old Delhi and everything is the nicest, cleanest, most comfortable metro that I think I've ever been on. And, you know, when you arrive in India, you just expect it to be hot and dirty and kind of just grimy of a place. And then you go down to the metro terminal and it's just like this pearly white sleek metro with AC pumping. And you're just like, am I in the right country? Like, where am I? So definitely take the metro. It's really cheap. It's really comfortable. And that's just a great way to get into the city. So I did stay in a hostel in Old Delhi, and for the most part, it was a really nice hostel. Nice beds, AC, all that cool stuff. The only problem I had, which really isn't the hostel's fault, is there were people in my room who were like turning on the lights at 1, 2, and 3 in the morning. And that's just, you know, not good hostel manners right there. So always take like a little flashlight, and try to be respectful of the people in the hostel with you. But once again, that's not the hostel's fault, so can't really complain, too much about that. But you know, a hostel is maybe like $6 or $7 to stay there, and it was in a pretty decent part of town, and I would stay there again. There was actually a restaurant right down the road, which I guess I'll go ahead and move on to my next suggestion of making sure you try authentic Indian food. There was a restaurant right down the road. It was just like a little street stall. And so I go in, sit down, and it's really interesting because when you eat at these little restaurants in India, if the place is crowded and there's no open seatings, they don't care. They'll just sit you down next to some random family at their table. And so you're just sitting there like, oh, hey, hope I'm not interrupting some important family discussion. So they just sat me right across from this other dude who was sitting there eating. And so I tried the food. It was amazing. And I actually got sick from eating the food, just like stomach sick, whatever. And the food was so good that literally my last day in India, I went back to the same restaurant, had the same exact food that I had the first time, and I got sick again, and it was still worth it. So Indian food is really good. It can be on the spicy side, but definitely try your hand at different dishes while you're there. So I really had a quick stop in India. I was only there for about 3 days, really two full days and then part of a day. And this is, you know, the minimum amount of time you could ever spend in India. And I really feel it's a disservice to the country to even recommend that you go there for this short amount of time. But in my case, it's all that I could squeeze into my itinerary. And so that's what I'm going to kind of explain to you today. But if you have extra time, if you have a week, if you have a couple weeks, I definitely recommend spending more time in India. There's so much to do and see there, and you will never be bored. I really don't think you could spend a month there and still see everything. I ran into people who had been backpacking around India just itself for like a month. So, you know, India is a huge place, and it's just full of history and culture, and I would definitely recommend staying for multiple days. But in Delhi, there's quite a few sites, and the first place that I went to was the India Gate. And the India Gate is sort of like the Arc de Triomphe. It commemorates some historical portion of India's history. It really just looks like the Arc de Triomphe, just a smaller version. And it's just like in a park, like in a square of a park. And it's a really cool monument. And there's always a ton of people milling around, selling stuff out of their backpacks and just, you know, having a good old time, picnics, things like that. And so one of my most random stories that I have about India is when I was at the India Gate, this random guy just came up to me and asked me if I wanted to get my ears pierced. And I'm looking around like, I don't see an ear piercing place. What are you talking about? And he pulls like this little box out of his backpack, and it has rusty needles and stud earrings in it. And he's like, I can pierce your ears. And I'm just like, have people actually taken you up on this offer? I'm going to, you know, hard pass on this. No, thank you. So I honestly didn't even ask him how much he was charging, but, you know, if you're in India, you want to get your ears pierced, I'm sure this guy would give you a killer deal. Emphasis on the killer part, because, you know, you're definitely probably going to lose an ear if you go that route for getting your ears pierced in India. But actually, another crazy part of this India Gate story is before I even got there. So I was walking around and I was looking for a tuk-tuk to take me to the India Gate. And I found this guy who said he'd be willing to take me there. So we sort of arrange a price. And whenever we arrange the price, then he goes to his other friend and says, take this guy to the India Gate, basically. And so I'm not sure if he was like the sort of the leader and was kind of finding, you know, people to take taxis that he might have owned or something. But I got into the tuk-tuk, and the driver gets in as well. And we're about to leave, and he asks where I'm going. And I say the India Gate. And he tells me, I can't take you there. There are protests going on, and let me take you to this other site, and then we can go to the India Gate later. And he like pulls out a map, and he shows me this whole route that we can take. And by the end of it, he says that the protests will be over, and we can go to the India Gate. Well, you know, I had done a bunch of research, and I had heard that this was a scam. I had seen this scam throughout all my blog posts and things like that that I had looked through. And so, you know, I'm on a tight time schedule. It's like 10 in the morning. I have a train to Agra at about 6. So I have like 8 hours, and there's 3 or 4 big sites that I want to go to in this little amount of time. And so I'm like, no, I don't have time to, you know, take this whole route. I want to go to the India Gate right now. And he, you know, he's insistent. No, there are protests. I can't take you there. And, you know, I'm thinking to myself, he's telling me that it's closed. And this is a huge monument. Like, I don't need to be inside of the square to see the India Gate. I can be across the street and have an amazing view there. And so I'm like, look, I don't even have to go inside. Just take me to the India Gate. It's a monument. Just I can see it from around the outskirts of the fenced off area. Like, it's no big deal. Just take me there. And so this guy is adamant. I mean, he is playing, you know, the long game on this scam. And so finally, I'm just like, no, this is where I'm going. And you, this is what we agreed upon. So take me there. And finally, he just says, no, get out of my tuk-tuk. And I'm just startled. I have never, one, been refused, you know, a tuk-tuk driver. They're always ready to take you there. Even if you lowball them, they're always coming back with a counter and all this kind of stuff. And so I was just like, what? And he's like, get out of my tuk-tuk. I'm not taking you there. And so I was like, okay. So I just grab my backpack, walk 2 tuk-tuks down, and then find a guy who takes me for the same exact price. And, you know, of course, we show up to the India Gate. There's no protest going on. It's just a normal day in Old Delhi. And that was a very unique experience. I had never been in a situation where a tuk-tuk driver actually basically kicked me out of his tuk-tuk for refusing to accept this scam that he was offering me. And the big part of the scam is, one, that he's taking you to all these other places. And so he's going to charge you a lot more because he's taking you to 5 places instead of just the 1. So he's trying to get more money out of you. And I'm really not sure if maybe the reason he wasn't even, you know, countering with me was because this other guy agreed on the price, and maybe the driver didn't like the price. He thought that, you know, this other guy who had agreed on the price sort of lowballed it. And so he didn't want to take me to the India Gate for that price. I'm not really sure, but it was definitely a weird situation that I've never been in that situation before, and I have yet to be in that situation again. So very interesting. I did eventually make it to the India Gate, and all was well and good. One other scam that happened before I even got to that situation was I planned on walking quite a little bit because I just like walking around the cities. And so I was walking down the road, and this guy came up to me and we started talking. He spoke very good English. He said he was like a businessman from the United States, who was from Delhi. And, you know, a lot of these times I give these people no credit whatsoever. But this guy, you know, we had a good conversation. He spoke really good in English, so we were just conversing back and forth. And so eventually, you know, I was like talking to him about what I was doing. And he says, well, you should go to the government tourist office. And basically, there's not a museum pass, but like a tourist attraction pass that you can buy at the government office. And basically, if I went there, then I could buy this pass and it would save me a lot of money and a lot of time. And, you know, a lot of times I would just say like, no, thank you. But he was very adamant about it, and I kind of trusted him. So I was like, okay. So he got me a tuk-tuk, and he got me a good deal for this tuk-tuk. And so I get in and I take off, and they drop me off at this little building just on a street. And it's on a main street. It's nothing sketchy or anything. And so I go into this building, and as soon as I sit down, I realize I'm just in a regular old tourist office. And so, of course, the guy there at the desk is trying to sell me these sightseeing plans to go around Delhi and all this kind of stuff. And so immediately I'm just like, oh, I've thought I was somewhere else. I'm sorry. I don't want anything. And I left. So I had actually heard about this scam as well, where they'll try and like trick you into going to a tourist office. I honestly don't know if it was the tuk-tuk driver took me to the wrong place on purpose, or if it was the guy I was talking to on the street told the tuk-tuk driver to take me to this tourist office, or maybe it was just a misunderstanding all the way around. I don't know if there's anything special about going to the government tourist office to begin with. So, you know, just be on the lookout for little things that seem kind of off. Nothing really came out of this scam. I just lost a little bit of time going to this tourist office. So just be careful. I really feel like India was the most, I got scammed or tried to be scammed the most in India. I mean, two scams in like 30 minutes. So just be on the lookout and you'll be fine. So after I went to the India gate, I went to the Qutub Minar. And I'll put this one in the description because I'm not sure if I'm saying it right. But the Qutub Minar is the tallest all-brick minaret in the world. It was built in the 13th century, and it stands at 72.5 meters tall. Now, it's really funny because the Taj Mahal, which was built about 300-400 years later, is 73 meters tall. And whenever I was doing research for my trip, I saw something that said when they built the Taj Mahal, basically it was almost like the same height as the Qutub Minar, and so they made sure to add that extra half meter to make sure it was like the tallest building or the tallest structure in all of India. I couldn't, when I was getting ready to make the podcast, I couldn't go back and find that source, so don't quote me on it, but I'm 99% sure I remember seeing that, and whether it's true or not, it's pretty hilarious. So one story on the way to the Qutub Minar, and you know, I went during the summer, and so it was sort of off season. I mean, it's burning hot. It's about 100 degrees, and there's not a lot of tourists there whatsoever. And so I was really surprised by Delhi. I mean, when you think about India, you think about crowded streets, you think about, you know, dirty roads and cows just laying in the middle of the street. And for the most part, New Delhi was not like that whatsoever. I was really surprised and just thinking, this is not what I thought India was going to be like. But on my way to the Qutub Minar, you kind of go through this rougher section that does sort of resemble more of India. And while I was going there, I was in a tuk-tuk. And if you've never ridden in a tuk-tuk, it's sort of like a tricycle, or I guess it's more of a GNC tuk-tuk. It's a motorized sort of like tricycle thing where the sides are totally open. And so it's a great form of transportation just because, one, it's cheap, but two, you're just like out in the open. It's not as dangerous as riding like a bike taxi, but you know, you get all the smells, you can hear all the sounds, and you're not just inside of like an enclosed capsule of a car driving to the site. So that's normally the way that I like to travel. And so we're going down the road and there's like a stoplight or a stop sign or something, and we're stopped there, a ton of traffic everywhere. And of course there's beggars. I mean, there's beggars everywhere. But I'm just sitting there in the tuk-tuk, kind of just like looking around, enjoying the sights. And there's this lady over here next to me begging. And so I'm just sitting there minding my own business, trying not to like give her too much attention. And all of a sudden, a hand just grabs my leg, and I'm like scared half that. I like jump, and I look over, and this old beggar lady has just put a death grip on my leg from the curb into the tuk-tuk. And I'm just like wide-eyed. I'm staring at my tuk-tuk driver like, are you gonna do something? Like, what do I even do in this situation? I can't like push her off. I'm not going to push this old lady from grabbing me. That's just doesn't seem right. But then at the same time, I don't want this crazy old lady grabbing my leg either. And so the whole time she's just grasping my leg, she's like saying all these like chants and weird things. And I'm just like, what in the world is going on? So immediately I'm thinking, what is in my left pocket? And I had like, I think my passport maybe, or my phone. I had something valuable on my left side. And so I immediately put my hand over my pocket just to cover that, because I didn't know if she was going to try and grab something out of my pocket or not. And so I'm covering my pocket. This lady is just holding on to me, and the tuk-tuk driver is just like yelling and probably cussing her out. I couldn't understand what he was saying, but he was just like yelling. And so he starts to like drive forward a little bit, but we're in like bumper to bumper traffic. He can't go anywhere. And so eventually he just like reaches behind and starts like slapping at her arm to get it off. And she will not let go. I mean, this lady is serious. And I still don't know what to do. So I'm just like looking at her hand and I'm just covering my pocket, making sure, you know, she can't grab anything. And eventually the light turns green and we go and she lets go and we're just keeping on our way. And that was, I was totally bewildered by that moment, and who knows how many hexes and curses she was spitting out at me while holding on to me. But that was definitely unique, and you know, that's a small danger of taking a tuk-tuk, but you know, it was interesting, and you know, just another cool experience to have there in India, just some beggar grabbing you as you're driving by in a tuk-tuk. So be careful, watch your things. I never really had anybody try and steal anything, but that's probably the closest. And I don't even know if she was trying to steal anything. She was just trying to get my attention and, you know, get a few dollars. So anyways, the Qutub Minar, tallest brick minaret in the world. It's pretty interesting. And honestly, I was surprised. I did not realize that there was like a complex around the minaret. So there were some like ruins besides the minaret there. And I probably spent, you know, a solid hour just walking around the grounds. There's not much to do at the actual minaret. It's just like a tower. You used to be able to go up to like the top of it. There's a staircase inside, but I believe there was an earthquake or something several years back. And so that's no longer an option for tourists to do. I really found the Minar, actually most of the places in Delhi were really cool, because not only was I one of the few tourists at the location, but there were a lot of nationals there as well, a lot of Indian people, you know, at the sites. And so India was the one place, one of the places where, you know, people would come up and want to take pictures with you and things like that, just because I was white. So that was a cool experience. It was never so much so that, you know, it got annoying. There was multiple people who would want to take pictures, but you know, it wasn't just overbearing. So it was pretty cool. After Qutub Minar, I recommend going to Humayun's tomb. And Humayun's tomb was built in the 1500s, almost 100 years before the Taj Mahal. And the Humayun's tomb is for Humayun, and it's his mausoleum. And it really resembles the Taj Mahal, but it's in the red brick instead of the marble. And in the Humayun's tomb complex, there's actually a few other things. And one of the most famous, I think, is probably the tomb of Isa Khan. It's really beautiful. It's a lot smaller, but there's a lot of ceramic and tile work that's really beautiful. And actually, I don't know if this is like a worldwide thing, but on my like Google desktop background thing that, you know, turns on whenever my computer goes to sleep, one of the photos that comes up is the tomb of Isa Khan. So whenever it comes up, I'm like, hey, there's that tomb that I've been to. So it's pretty cool. And one thing about the complex around Humayun's tomb, apparently people used to live around it. And so like each of these little, like the tomb of Isa Khan is in its own little walled-in complex. And there's several of them. And apparently like each of those little walled-in places used to be like where different clans of people would stay. So it was pretty cool, the history there. And there are like signs and stuff for you to read, which is really neat. So there's a lot of other things to do in Delhi. These were the sites that I was able to hit in that like 6-7 hour window. And so definitely if you have more than one day, spread these out and hit other places as well. There are multiple markets that would be really neat to go to. I watched a travel vlog just like last week about New Delhi, and there were like multiple things that this guy went and did that I hadn't even come across in all my research, and they were like pretty big sites. So definitely, you know, do some more research, find some other things to do in Delhi if you have multiple days. I feel like 2 or 3 days in Delhi would easily be filled with things to do, and you would definitely, you know, stay engaged for that whole amount of time. So after Delhi, I took a train to Agra. And I really think that taking a train is probably the most popular form of transportation to Agra. It's really cheap, and it's pretty easy to figure out. I will say that most of the trains that I rode on this trip, they're not very good about saying, oh, this is the next stop we're going to. Like, I always had this picture in my mind that if I was taking a train from Delhi to Agra, that when we were arriving Agra, someone would be like at the end of the hall yelling, next stop Agra, next stop Agra. And that was not the case. I think that happened on one train ride. And so you just really need to pay attention to where you are. I would always have like the Maps Me open on my phone so I could just track myself where I was going. And I also had a cool experience on the way to Agra. I sat with a family from Agra, and the dad was actually in the Indian military. So we talked for most of the trip, and that was really interesting. And so they helped me out whenever we were getting close. They're like, okay, this is the stop. You need to get off here. So very cool. But once again, it was really cheap, and I bought those tickets ahead of time. I'm sure you could buy them at the actual train station, but I planned everything to a T for this trip, and so I made sure to have those tickets prior to even leaving on the trip. So in Agra, obviously, the main site is the Taj Mahal. There are a few other minor sites there as well, which I'll kind of bring up here in a few minutes. But I always recommend picking your hostel or hotel based off of location. And this is a place where that, you know, really, I really push that just because I got there kind of late at night. And so going up onto my balcony and just seeing that I'm like two or three blocks away from the Taj Mahal and I can just see it in the distance and see the silhouette, that was incredible. And just knowing like, oh, I'm going to go get to see the Taj Mahal in like 5 or 6 hours. To me, that's a really cool thing to know and a really cool experience. Now, Agra was what I expected out of India. I arrived in Agra and, you know, I'm walking around and there are cows walking around everywhere. They're laying in the middle of the road. The streets are just nuts. I was walking this down this little short alleyway to my hostel and there was like a wedding going on and kids were throwing flower petals at me as I walked by. It was just the, you know, what I expected to get out of India everywhere. That's what I found in Agra. So I was honestly a little disappointed in Delhi by, you know, the environment and everything, but I found it in Agra. And so that was really nice to actually get that true, what I thought was the true Indian experience. So like I said, I stayed really close to the Taj Mahal. I recommend it for you as well. And there are three gates for the Taj Mahal, but the east gate and the west gates are the ones that open first. And so, you know, I'm the guy who wakes up at ungodly hours in order to be the first one at a site. And so I stayed as close as I could to the east gate. Now, I had a hard time figuring out what time the Taj Mahal opened. Multiple sites told me it opens based off of sunrise times. The actual Taj Mahal site told me that it opened at 6 o'clock when I was there. But in reality, it opened at 5 o'clock. So, you know, if someone can let me know how to actually figure out what time the Taj Mahal opens, that would be cool for me to pass along. But I honestly just got lucky because of how early I wanted to get there. So be mindful of that. Show up earlier than you think just to be on the safe side if it's important to you to be the first one into the site. So I actually, the people in my room at the hostel were planning on going for sunrise as well. So we got up at around 4:30, and it was literally a 5-minute walk to the east gate. And so we were, you know, standing at the gate by 4:35. Now, you can buy your ticket at the Taj Mahal, and the ticket gate opens a little bit before the gate, so they were able to just go ahead and get their tickets. But I bought my tickets ahead of time, and it's maybe a couple extra dollars to do that, but I knew it would just save me, you know, the trouble and the hassle of doing it. while I was there. Now, the only thing about doing this is whenever you buy a ticket, you get like 2 free bottles of water. And so since I bought my ticket online, I didn't get this. And so whenever my friends from the hostel came back, they had all their water and stuff. And I was like, oh crap, I totally forgot I got that for free. So I just ran down to the ticket office, showed them my ticket, and they gave me the water and stuff. And then my friends had kept my place in line. So like I said, we got there at 4:30. The gates actually opened at 5 o'clock. And I think they opened the east gate maybe like 30 seconds before the west gate, because as soon as we're walking through the gates, I can see people just starting to come through on the other side. And so I'm like fast walking. I could have qualified for the Olympics, I'm pretty sure, for fast walking, just to make sure that I got to the Taj Mahal first. And there was another guy just sort of like right behind me. And I was able to get there before anybody else, take a few quick pictures. And then me and this other guy were just sort of, you know, being mindful of each other, taking pictures. And we had that place to ourselves for, you know, 5-6 minutes. And I personally had it by myself for like a minute. And if you think that's crazy that I'd get up at 4:30 in the morning to have 1 minute by myself at a wonder of the world, then I don't think you know me at all, because I have done that multiple times, and that is the greatest experience ever, in my opinion, is just to have this amazing thing that you're able to experience all by yourself, even if it is for a split second. I was thinking back on it, and you know, whenever I climbed up in Halong Bay up in Vietnam, and I just had maybe like 10 minutes by myself, just with that amazing, one of the most amazing views I've ever seen in my life. And I was able to just experience by myself for a few moments, thinking about Petra. And I literally sprinted down the Sikh to get to the treasury first and just have that all to myself, and then sprinted up to the monastery to have that by myself. So waking up at 4:30 just to have a minute by myself at the Taj Mahal was a no-brainer to me. That might not be something that interests you whatsoever. You might show up at noon and have a great time with the 1,000 other people who are there. But for me, you know, that's a really cool experience to have. And I always try to put myself in a position to have that experience if I can. That's not always the case, and you can't always make that happen. But when I can, I try to. So the Taj Mahal is awesome. Definitely recommend, obviously, going there if you're in Agra, and if you're in India, if you have the time to. There are a few tips while you're at the Taj Mahal. The first one is there are 2 like little mosques on either side of the Taj Mahal, and the one on the west side, if you go over there, you can get some really good pictures of sunrise, take some like silhouette photos. So really cool. Definitely recommend checking that out. And then also, you have to buy a separate ticket to go into the Taj Mahal. And I initially had not gotten this option because the Taj Mahal ticket was pretty expensive. It was like $60, I think. And it was like an extra 10 or 15 to go inside the Taj Mahal. But I was talking to some people there, and they're like, you know, it might not be incredible, but when's the next time you're going to be in India? And I always feel like I use that statement myself, like when's the next time I'm going to be here, be able to do this? And so I was like, you know what, you're right. And so I did it. And the thing is, going inside the Taj Mahal is not necessarily that impressive. I honestly wouldn't even recommend going inside the Taj Mahal. If that's all you got out of your $10-$15, I wouldn't necessarily even say that it's worth it. But the fact that you get to be close to the Taj Mahal, when you don't buy that ticket, you're kind of still set down below the Taj. And although you can see it in all its glory, you can't actually go up to it. You can't put your hand on it. You can't, you know, appreciate the precious gemstone inlays that are there in the marble. And so just for that reason alone, I recommend buying the extra pass to go inside, just that you can get right up next to the Taj. You can see all the marble work. That was the most impressive part to me. So I do recommend buying that extra ticket. And just, you know, being able to really appreciate all the hard work and all the detail that was put into building this magnificent structure. I probably spent about 3 hours at the Taj, and I feel like I saw every nook and cranny of that place. So I don't really think you could have spent more time than that. You definitely could have spent less if you wanted to. I would say, you know, an hour and a half would be a solid amount of time to see there as well. But I sat around, took different pictures, waited for different, you know, sun positions to take better, you know, lighting photos and things like that. So just keep that in mind. So at about 7:30, that's pretty crazy that I spent like 3 hours there and was leaving at 7:30. I went back to my hostel, had breakfast, slept until like noon, because I think I got to Agra at like close to midnight. And so I had like 4 hours of sleep. So I was pretty exhausted. So I went and took a nap. And then my train ride out left at around maybe 6 o'clock again that night. And so I was running low on money. And I really figured I had enough money to basically go see one more site. And so in Agra, there's the Agra Fort. And also the Baby Taj, which I'm sure I will butcher this, so I'll put it in the description below. It is the tomb of Itmad-ud-Dala. And that's what I ultimately chose. I drove by the Agra Fort on my way to the Baby Taj, and it looked really impressive. But the Baby Taj looked like something I'd be more interested in just because of the architecture and things like that. So I'm not sure how packed this site would be, say, during the winter months when there's more tourism there. But during the summertime, there was like two other people at the Baby Taj, and they were both Indians. So I was like the only foreign tourist at the site there. It was really impressive. It was definitely not as big as the actual Taj, but the inlays were just as gorgeous. It was actually built maybe 10 years before the actual Taj Mahal. And so people often say that the Taj Mahal was sort of built based off of the Baby Taj. So since it was summer and since the tourism season was low there, my tuk-tuk driver who took me there, he was trying to get me to let him take me to the train station after the Baby Taj. And so a lot of drivers will do that on your trips. They'll try and basically hire themselves for the whole day. And that just, you know, allows them to make more money and be assured that they're going to make a full day's worth of pay for that day. But I knew that I was going to be just burning time over there at the Baby Taj. And so I was like, no, you know, I'm going to probably spend like 3 hours here. So I don't want you to just sit here and wait. I also just didn't want to have to pay him 3 hours worth of waiting time because I knew I could easily find another driver. So he was just like, no, like I'll take you to the train station. So I'm like, well, look, I'm going to go ahead and pay you now so that if you want to leave, that's fine. But if you're still here, then sure, I'll hire you to take me to the train station. So I go inside, and I did. I literally spent like 3 hours there because I was literally just wasting time until my train left. And so, you know, I saw the entire site. It was like easily 100 degrees. So I'm just sitting there inside the Baby Taj in the shade. There was a river right behind the Baby Taj. And so there's like cows down there, and there were some kids playing cricket. And so I'm just sitting up there kind of watching. I think I took a nap in the shade. Pretty much just bummed it out around there. And after about 3 hours, it's getting pretty close for me to head back to the train station. And so I start to leave, and all of a sudden I hear this guy yelling at me, and I look over and it's the same tuk-tuk driver. And I'm like, dude, you literally waited around for 3 hours. Of course you can take me to the train station. Like, sure. So he took me to the train station. Like I mentioned earlier, as soon as I got back in Delhi, I went back to that restaurant that I got sick at. Ate the same exact meal again, got sick again, but it was still good both times. And so, yeah, I would probably go back if I went to Delhi again. So that was my time in India. It was jam-packed, crazy. I've heard several people say, like, go to Agra for, like, 2 days, no more than 2 days. You know, I felt like I got a lot done in a day. I could have gone to the Agra Fort if I wanted to, during that time. So, I would really just say if you spend the night in Agra, I would say spend one night in Agra and then you have like a morning and an afternoon, and that should be plenty of time to see around the area. Delhi, you could spend multiple days. And one of the other places that I've heard a lot about is Jaipur. A lot of people go there, and actually someone just mentioned the other day on one of my Instagram posts that they went to the Amber Fort in Jaipur, and it's apparently magnificent. I just looked it up. Since I wasn't going to Jaipur, I didn't really do a lot of research there, but I looked up the Amber Fort. It looks amazing. It's this huge place. Looks really magnificent. So if you're in Jaipur, check that out. And there's so many different places around the country also that, you know, are incredible, that if you take like a road trip around the country, you should definitely check out. So, you know, once again, I spent 3 partial days in India, and I would totally recommend spending at least a week there. This is one of the places where I know I did not give it enough credit. And so, yeah, if you're going to India, try and book more time than this. But, you know, if you only have 2 days or whatever, if you have like a long layover, here, these are some things that you can definitely fit into that time slot. All right, so after India, I took a medium-long flight down to Sri Lanka. And Sri Lanka was a place that I initially didn't even have planned. And then maybe like a month or two before my trip, I was like, hey, I'm so close to Sri Lanka, let's add it to my itinerary. And so I kind of shuffled some things around and added, I guess, 3 days in Sri Lanka to my itinerary. And Sri Lanka turned out to be one of my favorite places on the entire trip. When I came back and people asked me what my favorite country was that I visited, for the most part, I'd always say Sri Lanka, just because overall it was such an amazing experience and I just loved the people there. I loved the culture. I loved just the atmosphere, the jungle, all that kind of stuff, the exoticness that I felt. And so, you know, Sri Lanka is a great place. And when I went there, they recently had bombings in the city of Colombo, the capital, which is where you'd fly into. And so I was talking to my driver, and he was telling me how that had basically just shut down tourism. And so I know that that definitely affected my perspective of the country. I'm not exactly sure how much more crowded and crazy it would be during peak season if everyone was there. But when I was there, since there were so few tourists, I really felt like it was all the good parts of, say, Indonesia. You have like the jungle and the exotic wildlife and things like that, but you don't have all the cons of how many people are there with you. And so it just really gave me a good, I just really enjoyed having all these awesome experiences without as many tourists there with me. And so once again, you're going to fly into Colombo. And I took a private driver to Siguiria, and Siguiria is famous for Lion's Rock, which is a old fortress that was built there on top of this, basically like this huge boulder that's just sitting in the middle of the jungle. And so for me, I really love history. And so this was kind of a really unique place in Sri Lanka, and it's really cool. I mean, it used to have a lion's, basically had a lion's head coming out of the rock with its paws underneath it. And unfortunately, the lion's head's no longer there, but the paws are still there, and they're just crazy. There's the staircase goes right in between the paws, and so you're just walking between these giant lion paws there. So it's really cool. But obviously, there's a lot of other places to visit in Sri Lanka. I'll cover those at the end. But this is where I really just thought, hey, this is where I want to go. This is the site I want to see. And I had, you know, 2 full days there. So this is what I'm going to choose. Now, when you're in Siguiria, there's actually 2 different rocks. There's Lion's Rock and then there's Pitarangala. And Pitarangala is basically the same thing. It's another rock in the middle of the jungle. And there's a monastery at the bottom of it. But you can climb this sort of mountain. And it offers the best views of Lion's Rock. And so a lot of people will climb there for sunrise or sunset. So the first night I was there, I climbed up for sunset. And it's a great view. You can see the entire region. It's just all jungle. It's pretty crazy. There's actually this huge, giant Buddha statue sort of off in the distance, and it's just completely white. And so the first night I was up there, I saw it, and I was like, what is that? And so I did some research later that night and found out that it was like this 50-meter tall Buddha statue just out in the middle of the jungle. And so I was like, huh, I'm going to have to go find that. So the next day, I rented a bicycle, which I recommend doing. It's like a couple dollars for an afternoon. And I just rode around, and I went and found this giant Buddha statue. And there's actually a complex around it that you could pay to go into, but I really wasn't that interested. I just wanted to see this huge statue. So I just took a couple pictures and left. But anyways, back on the rock there, it's a great view. It's a nice little hike. There's a lot of people up there. Like, that's the main tourist attraction besides Lion's Rock. So it's pretty cool to go up there. So like I mentioned, I rented a bicycle, and you know, I went and found this huge Buddha statue. There's also a lake there, sort of in between Pitarangula and Lion's Rock, and so it's just a cool place, just a great view to see the two different rocks, and there's just this lake. I saw some people fishing there, and so they were from like Australia or something, so we were talking, and it was pretty cool. Now, one thing I will mention is kind of, I guess, backtracking a few minutes. I'm going back to Pitarangula. When I was walking home from Pitarangula, it was maybe like a 3/4 mile hike to my homestay, and that's where I almost got trampled by an elephant. So there are elephants there in the jungle of Sri Lanka. It's actually one of the top places to see wild elephants. So be careful about wild elephants. I told that story, I believe it was episode 3. I told that story, so I'm not going to tell it again here. If you want to hear it, you can go check that out in episode 3. So there is so much wildlife there, and that's one of the reasons I loved it, was because there's elephants. I saw toucans in trees. There are monkeys everywhere. There are signs for crocodiles and alligators. It's just a really exotic and unique place, and so that's one of the reasons I really just loved it so much. It was just wild. One day after I was riding my bike, I went and got some fresh fruit from a fruit stand. And so I'm sitting there around a moat at Siguria, and I'm just sitting there. I think I had like a watermelon and some mangoes, and I'm just sitting there eating it. And all of a sudden I start noticing monkeys like kind of surrounding me. And I'd already had enough experience with monkeys to know that these guys are not your friend. And so, after a few minutes, I'm just eating my fruit, and I look around, and they're literally, like, surrounding me, and I'm like, they're about to, like, attack me for these mangoes. And so when I finally felt too unsafe, I just, like, chucked all my mangoes into the forest and took off on my bicycle, and all these monkeys just, like, attack those mangoes. And so watch out for monkeys. Those things, they're pretty terrifying. Okay, so Lion's Rock in and of itself is great. There is a museum at Lion's Rock where you have to buy your ticket, and I had not seen this anywhere in any of my research about Lion's Rock, and so I was really unprepared for it. I had planned on climbing Lion's Rock for the sunset, and so I arrived there maybe like an hour and a half before, you know, sunset time, and so I obviously wasn't going to pass up a good museum, so I kind of just ran through it in like 20 minutes. But I definitely would have allotted maybe like 45 minutes to give it some more time there. So keep that in mind. There is a museum at Lion's Rock. And there's actually like a complex around Lion's Rock. It's not just the fortress itself. There's a lot of ruins, around the rock as well. When you're climbing it, there are mosaics on part of the face of the mountain, and there's, carvings and things like that. So take your time when you're walking up to the top to appreciate all these different aspects of the site. So it's not as great of a view for sunset simply because you want Lion's Rock in the picture for the sunset. So, you know, it's not as beautiful of a scene, but it's still cool just to know you're on top of Lion's Rock in this fortress watching the sunsets. That is pretty neat. So after that, I took my private driver. That was like the only way I could get there was a private driver. Back to Colombo, but I stopped at Negumbo Beach, and there's obviously a ton of beaches in Sri Lanka. And when I was doing my research, it kind of just depended on what you're interested in doing at the beach to where you would want to go. Like, there's good surfing beaches. There's good just relaxing beaches. And I honestly just picked Negumbo Beach because it was close to the airport in Colombo. And it was really cool. One of my favorite experiences from this entire trip was I was sitting on Negumbo Beach just enjoying the views. And I noticed like maybe 10 kids walk out onto the beach with cricket stuff. And I mean, it was during the time frame of the Cricket World Cup or World Series or whatever it's called. And so literally everywhere on TV, I had just been watching cricket. And I had thought I had kind of figured out the rules for cricket. And so I went up to them and was like, hey, do you mind if I play? And, you know, they're like maybe 12 years old. And so they're like, sure, come on, let's play. So I get out there and they were all definitely better than me. But I got a few lucky wickets in there. And so it was just a really, really cool experience. One that I won't forget anytime soon. It was really cool. And I feel like most of the time locals are going to be, you know, that hospitable, that kind, if you are as well. So if that's, you know, take your chances, go up and start talking to locals, things like that. But yeah, playing cricket with the local kids there in Sri Lanka was pretty awesome. Now, that was basically my entire time in Sri Lanka. It was really cut and dry, not too much that I did there. But some of the things that you can do that I did research that I would want to look into if I went back, which Sri Lanka is one of the places that I do want to go back to one day, was taking the train to Kandy. I'm honestly not sure what there is to do in Kandy, but the train ride to Kandy is apparently pretty epic. So look into that. The Nine Arch Bridge in Ella is probably one of the most photographed locations in all of Sri Lanka. It's just a terraced bridge that goes across like this ravine between two mountains, and it's just this train track comes straight out of a jungle over this Nine Arch Bridge back into the jungle. It's pretty crazy. People just go and sit next to the railway waiting for the train to come across the bridge. It's pretty cool. And it was one of the places that I wanted to go to, but it was kind of just too far out of the way and I couldn't make it work with my time. Dambulla is another place in Sri Lanka. There are some cave temples there, which are pretty interesting. And then also elephant safaris. This was probably one of my only regrets that I had from my entire trip. And it's that I did not go on an elephant safari in Sri Lanka. I thought about it. I was really mulling it over while I was there. But long story short, it was pretty expensive. It was going to be like $80. And I was like maybe 3 or 4 weeks into my trip at this point, and I was just not ready to, you know, make that big of a monetary decision. And so ultimately, I decided not to go on an elephant safari. So I do regret doing that, not doing that, I suppose. And I definitely recommend going on an elephant safari when you're in Sri Lanka. It's literally the top one or two places in the world to see wild elephants. So definitely look into that. There are quite a few elephant safari parks there. Yala and Udawalaway are two. I'll put these in the description. They're two of the main safari parks in the south of the country. And then Kadula and Minaria are in the northeast section of the country. And I think those two are sort of part of the same park. I've heard that Minaria and Udawalaway are the two best places to go on safari. So kind of just depending on where you're at, price-wise, things like that, check out which one best fits your needs. But I definitely recommend checking out an elephant safari. You know, don't worry about the price. I think it's one of those experiences that, at least for me personally, I regret not doing. And, you know, I have $80 in my pocket right now that I much would rather have gone to see some wild elephants. So that's my Sri Lanka trip. Like I said, this is a place that I definitely want to go back to one day. I'm not really sure how, you know, if there's more tourists there, how I will feel about the experience then. But I had a great experience being one of the few tourists in the country, and I loved it. I heard a lot of people talking about, like, you know, there were bombings there. You're still going there, just sort of apprehensive about it. And the one thing that I just kept coming back to is a lot of times you're not going to find like bombings in back-to-back places. Like, I feel like if it happens in one place, then it's kind of like, okay, well, it's safe now. They're not going to bomb the same place twice. And there's, you know, attacks happen everywhere. I mean, they happen in the United States. They've happened in like Paris. Colombo is, you know, no different than all these other situations that have happened. And so obviously you should be careful and don't put yourself into situations where you are in danger. But kind of just weigh the pros and cons. I did not feel like I was in danger going to Sri Lanka at the time. And there was never a time while I was there that I was like, oh, crap, like this is sort of a sticky situation. I never felt that way. And so kind of just weigh the pros and cons, look into advice from people who might be living in the country at the time or things like that. So that's all I've got for you today. India and Sri Lanka, amazing places. If you go to one, you might as well go to the other. They're just right there next to each other. And so next week, I will get into Myanmar and Cambodia. I've got a ton to share about Myanmar. Myanmar is an incredible place, one of my favorite countries. Baygon was probably top two or three places that I visited in my entire trip. So definitely looking forward to sharing all of that next week. Once again, if you want to see any pictures from India, Sri Lanka, you can check out my Instagram. I have stories for each of those and then random posts throughout my feed about them as well. So check that out at Educate Your Travel on Instagram. So until next time, remember, it is up to you to make your life interesting. So get up, get out, explore the world, take that next adventure. Thank you so much again for joining me here today, and can't wait to catch up with you next time.